Hello, iterative marketers. Welcome to the Iterative Marketing Podcast, where each week we give marketers and entrepreneurs actionable ideas, techniques, and examples to improve your marketing results. If you want notes and links to the resources discussed on the show, sign up to get them emailed to you each week at iterativemarketing.net. There you'll also find the Iterative Marketing blog and our community LinkedIn group where you can share ideas and ask questions of your fellow iterative marketers. Now let's dive into the show. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Iterative Marketing Podcast. I'm your host, Steve Robinson, and with me, as always, is the spontaneous and serendipitous Elizabeth Aaron. How are you doing today, Elizabeth?
I'm well. How are you, Steve?
I'm having a great day. What's new in your world these days?
Well, as our listeners know, my family and I bought a new trailer to go camping in this year, and we had a couple of run-ins with it, so we just dropped it off at the dealership to have it looked at. But it looks like it might be a lemon, so
really?
Not quite sure what's going to come out of that. Yeah.
So are you getting a new trailer or?
I don't know. They're supposed to call us this week and let us know. So I guess we'll find out if they can fix what's wrong with ours or if we're going to be going shopping for a new one.
I think you should just make this a habit and get a new trailer every year.
Well, is that what you're doing? Because I know you've got a little bit of a lemon in your life.
Yeah, I've got one of those fun Dieselgate Volkswagens. So the good news on my end is they're for sure buying it back and they're going to give me a couple extra $1,000 to boot. So at least I'll come out money ahead. I hope the same is true for you.
As long as we're not behind, I'm good. So we'll see what happens.
Excellent. So what are we really talking about today besides lemons of vehicles and trailers?
Yes, today we're talking about reporting, specifically how to build a report that you'll share with your internal stakeholders that is effective and is what they're looking for.
And through the course of today's podcast, we're going to kind of outline the why behind this report and why reporting is so important, because this is the second podcast that we've done on the topic. So obviously it's important to us. Here's why it should be important to you. And then we'll go through the actual report format. And then wrap up with the details of the structure of actually what needs to be in this document.
So, Steve, you mentioned this is our second podcast on reporting. Why have we dedicated an entire second episode to this?
In my mind, there's lots of reasons why we as marketers need to do a better job of reporting. Reporting is really, really important along a number of vectors, but probably they all roll up into a lack of respect, I think, that marketers get within the organization. And if we connect what we do back to something tangible, to real numbers, it shifts that away from the idea that marketing is fuzzy and artistic to, you know, no, we are business impactful and we generate revenue and build insights, right?
Yeah, it's not just that we like the color blue. There's a reason why we're doing what we're doing, and there's strategy behind what we're doing. And I think having been in that world, a lot of sometimes even the C-suite, but definitely internal other managers within the organization don't necessarily see marketing that way. So helping to change that perspective will get marketing the respect that it deserves.
And not just respect at the departmental level either. This can actually improve your career, right?
Yeah, definitely.
The other thing, and this is where we've seen this have the most impact with our clients, is if you do a really good job of reporting, you can actually get more budget. Mm-hmm. Do you want to explain why we've seen that?
Yeah, when we're able to prove that what we're doing is effective, we can ask for more money and get it because they're more willing to, you know, invest in us if we have this proven track record. And so reporting does that for us. By continuously reporting on that and showing what we're doing and showing that improvement over time, when we go in and say, we need X dollars for this new program, and here's why we think it's going to work, you know, that has more than just, I've got this gut feeling going in and talking to your finance guy.
And that creates like a virtuous cycle, right? Because the more budget you have, the more awesome things you can do, which means the more awesome things you can talk about in your next reporting, which means you get more money and et cetera, et cetera. So
exactly. I think there's another component where this impacts money, though, and that's your your personal wallet, in that when you're able to prove the effectiveness of what you're doing, when it comes time for negotiations or promotions, you now have this track record to fall back on, and it makes it that much easier to ask for and give reasoning as to why you think you deserve that promotion or why you deserve that raise. And so it's not just money in your department's pocket, it can be money in your own pocket as well.
And if you don't get the promotion that you're asking for, you now have a bunch of statistics to put in your resume.
Exactly. I think the other area why this is so important, and one of the reasons I'm so passionate about reporting, is having been on the corporate side. And, you know, I've sat there and struggled each month with, what is it that I'm going to report up to my C-suite? What is it that I'm going to share with my organization? And as marketers, we sort of straddle that, what's the right amount of information and what's too much information? And, you know, finding that balance.
I think you'd found a statistic that 69% of all marketers feel that their strategies have an impact, but they just don't know how to prove it. They don't know how to demonstrate that, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think it's important. If you're feeling this way, you are not alone.
Speaking of proving it, some of us don't just feel like we want to or should be proving it. Some of us are being told that we have to.
Exactly. There was a great article that came out on CMO.com, and it was 10 Great Expectations, What CEOs Want from Their CMOs. And even if you're not a CMO, I think that this message still applies, because the number one thing, the first thing on that list that CEOs are looking for is a focused financial steward. And what that means, what that comes down to, is ROI. They don't want to know that just hear that you want more budget. They want to know how you justify that expense and what that's going to mean for them in the future. And that's where effective reporting really comes in.
And I think that's only getting worse as more is shifting to digital, because there's this perception that everything in digital is immediately attributable and totally measurable, and there's no question where the dollars are going in digital. And that's not exactly true, but that's the perception that we battle as we talk to executives and we talk to the CEO.
You know, and I think that's one of the things that makes effective reporting so hard, is that CEOs do want to see that connection back to ROI, but just based on how marketing is structured and what we do, that's not possible. And we're going to talk more about that a little bit later, but it's a really interesting perspective that I don't know if everyone's considered, you know, as one of the reasons why it's so hard to report.
So before we get into exactly what goes into this report, I know that the majority of our audience is doing some sort of reporting today. What are we talking about today that's so different from what people are already doing?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. So what we're really talking about is looking at our investments and splitting them apart between revenue generating investments and capital investments. And what we mean by revenue generating is our ROI versus our capital, which are our assets. And we're going to get into that in more detail later in the podcast.
And the other component is the insight reporting, because if we're practicing iterative marketing, and I think a lot of what we're talking about today applies even if you aren't practicing iterative marketing, but if you are practicing iterative marketing, then the experiments that you're running are generating more than just incremental improvements in revenue. They're generating insights, and those insights are another way that you can demonstrate value to the organization and should be included in the report. I think this is probably a great point for us to take a quick break. So why don't we take a second and go talk about how we can help some people? And when we come back, we'll get into what goes into these reports.
Before we continue, I'd like to take a quick moment to ask you iterative marketers a small but meaningful favor and ask that you give a few dollars to a charity that's important to one of our own. This week's charitable cause was sent in by Naruse Dooley of Doubleberry. Naruse asks that you make a contribution to the Genesis House, a transitional home offering love and hope to young mothers having a difficult time making it on their own. Learn more at genesishousewi.com or visit the link in the show notes. If you would like to submit your cause for consideration for our next podcast, please visit iterativemarketing.net/podcast and click the Share a Cause button. We love sharing causes that are important to you.
And we're back. So before the break, we talked about the why behind reporting, why this is so important, and then introduced some of the ways that what we're going to talk about now is different from what you might be doing today. Now we're going to jump into what goes into this report. How do you actually build this thing out?
And I'm excited about this because, I think we all see the value in reporting. We all want to do it. And this sort of gets to the heart of where marketers struggle. And it's, what do I include and what do I talk about? So what are the components that are included in there? And I think the very first one we have to start with is we have to address what it is that our leaders are asking for, and that's ROI. And so how do we report on ROI?
ROI stands for return on investment. So this is measuring the amount of money that you're getting in compared to the amount of money that you're putting out. And to calculate it, you're going to borrow a formula from general ROI and adapt it a little bit to marketing. If you're Googling this or looking it up online, you'll probably find it listed as under the acronym ROMI, return on marketing investment, rather than ROI. But the formula is very similar. I'm going to say it here on the podcast. Fair warning, this is math via audio. This is not the ideal format for this, but I feel like it would be an omission if I didn't put it in here. So the way that you calculate this is you're going to take your attributable revenue, the revenue that you know that marketing contributed to and or created. You're going to subtract out the cost of generating that revenue. So these are just your marketing costs that go into the short-term gains associated with that program. So this is things like media and any production costs for content that is specific to the short-term goals of the program. And you're going to subtract those costs out of the attributable revenue. What you're left with is a number that's similar to a profit, right? This is what we made. Through our efforts, this is the money that we made. Then you divide that by the amount of money that you invested or your costs. You're going to end up with a percentage. Now, to move the decimal point a couple points over, and before you put the percentage sign on there, you're going to multiply that number times 100, and you have your marketing ROI, or your return on marketing investment, or ROMI value. And this is what you need to be including in the report.
So that sounds easy, right? I mean, it's sort of easy. It's math. But if you're really bad at math like me, I'm sure you can find a formula of some sort online or even an online calculator that can do it for you. So that part gets easy. Where it gets a little bit more complicated is that you have to know that attributable revenue to be able to figure out your ROI. And that's where we have a hard time. And that's because how marketing is structured and what we're doing is structured. And the problem is that true ROI can only be reported on after the sale has occurred. And so for a lot of us, our marketing efforts today are influencing sales that are happening 3 or 6 or 12 months down the road. And so we can't report on ROI because we don't know that attributable number. So what else can we use?
Well, in this case, I think we need to move over to projected revenue. And this isn't true for everybody. If you're in e-commerce, you can probably get away with reporting on actual revenue because most of your marketing efforts are going to result in sales that are within 1 or 2 reporting cycles of when you're performing those efforts. However, if you're in a B2B scenario, sometimes those sales, like you said, are 3, 6, 12 months down the road. So we have to project out what that revenue is going to look like. To do this, we're going to have to figure out what is the math that we can use to estimate future returns, future revenue. And that's going to be based on what are called KPIs, or key performance indicators. You want to take a quick second and define what a KPI is for our audience?
Yeah, of course. So KPIs are leading indicators of future performance. And this is going to really vary based on your business, but it can be things like marketing qualified leads or sales qualified leads, brand awareness scores, actual leads, phone calls, demos, trials, sort of those, again, those indicators that that you're moving in the right direction.
And those KPIs have a direct correlation to revenue. So they're, as the KPIs increase, so does revenue. And you have to figure out which of those KPIs you want to focus on that has that nice, tidy, direct correlation, and then figure out the math to support it. Once you do that, you can take a KPI value and turn it into a projected revenue value. Let's get a concrete example here, because it's kind of hard when you're talking figuratively. Let's say that you're in the business of generating leads, and leads are your KPI, marketing qualified leads. And you know that for every 10 marketing qualified leads, you're going to get 1 sale. So you generate 10 leads, 1 sale comes out, and you You figure that out by looking at about, you know, maybe 12 months worth of past data. You also can establish what is the value of that sale. What is the lifetime value of a new client? So you look at that number going back 1 or 2 years and you realize that a new customer is worth $10,000. And so if you know that a new customer is worth $10,000 over the lifetime of that sale, and that, and you know that 1 in 10 leads close, you can take that $10,000, divide it by 10, and now you have the value of a lead in revenue is $1,000. Now, that's in revenue. It doesn't take into account how profitable that particular account is. Not all of that is money that the organization gets to keep, but it's enough to be able to project revenue off of a lead. Each lead is $1,000 in projected revenue. I mentioned that all of this is based on KPIs. You really need to report your KPIs too. Why is that, Elizabeth?
Yeah, that's a great point. It's not any different than when we were in school. We had to show our work. And so that's what we're doing when we report on the KPIs, is that we're showing the numbers that led to that projected revenue. So we're showing that we didn't just pull a number out of the sky. We are basing this on things that we're able to track today, things that we are tracking today. And so there's a correlation there.
We had talked a little bit earlier about what some of those KPIs are. You're going to want to be selective about which KPIs you include in your report. And you may want to be looking at other KPIs behind the scenes. At the end of the day, though, you don't want to be looking at more data than you have to. So you're going to want to pick only the KPIs that have a direct correlation or direct impact on revenue or on other objectives of the business.
Now, we touched on how to do that, but if you'd like some more details, we have a great blog that we'll link to in the show notes.
The next component of your report is going to be assets. You know, Elizabeth had talked earlier about how what's unique here is that we split up our investment into ROI generating investment or return revenue generating investment and asset building investment. When we throw around the term asset, though, it might mean a little bit different in the context of marketing than it does in the rest of the business. Do you want to speak to that, Elizabeth?
Yeah, of course. So when we're talking about our assets within marketing, we kind of divvy them up into two buckets. The first is our short-term assets, and those are going to be things like media and creative and payroll and those items that are making an immediate impact. And you touched on a few of those earlier. The other bucket are long-term assets, and these are things like brand, content, and data. And we cover this topic in depth in episode 28, Three Key Assets for Future Marketing Success. And I definitely recommend you go back and listen to that because it provides a great overview of each of these as long-term assets. But we report on these because it shows to other people in the organization where our marketing dollars are going. With our short-term assets, we're able to, when we connect that over to attributable revenue, we can tie that back to ROI. We can't necessarily do that with long-term assets. These are things that are going to be spread out over a long period of time. And so we can't necessarily report on them in one specific cycle. We're going to be reporting on their effect and their impact over multiple periods. And so to do that, we want to kind of take those out and report on them separately.
So we talked about ROI. And we talked about reporting on revenue and the return on your investment as it relates to revenue for your programs. We talked about assets. The only remaining bucket is the insights that you are generating. And so included in your report needs to be what insights you have generated for the organization.
So insights are new pieces of information that add value to the organization as a whole. And this is one of those areas where when we report on insights, we're able to sort of elevate marketing's role. You know, we're not only showing the ROI that we're bringing, but now by reporting on these insights, we're also showing other actionable items that can be taken by other departments across the organization to improve what they're doing, whether it's their operations or their customer service. And so we really want to look through, to your point earlier, the experiments that we've run and the optimizations that we've made and pick out those best insights, those ones that are going to have the best application across the organizations. And we share that with them so that they are able to then make improvements based on what our data has shown.
And in order for this to be most impactful, we really, it's important that we're we have a shared vocabulary with those that we're reporting with. The reason why this is important is because often these insights are tied back to particular segments within our audience. So we might say that if we're relating it back to a persona, we might say that Jerry doesn't care about this particular feature or benefit because our experiments have shown that talking about it doesn't improve performance at all. That only works if our audience knows who Jerry is. And so this is a great reason why you need to be talking about, if you're using personas, you need to bring personas to light with everybody that you're presenting this reporting to and make sure that everybody is speaking the same language. Flip side of that is if you start talking about Jerry in meetings, people are going to ask, who is Jerry? And it's another opportunity to get everybody on the same page and pull out the personas and make sure that those don't sit in a drawer and they're just collecting dust.
We cover ROI, assets, and insights in more depth in episode 8, the 4 elements of effective reporting. If this is something that is of interest to you and you want to include it in your reports, definitely go back and give that a listen because it really goes much more in depth into each of these topics.
I think now would be a good time for us to break this down one more time and talk specifically about what should be in that report, what should be on that piece of paper or in the pixels, I guess, because nobody really delivers reports via paper anymore, that you're delivering to the team. Before we get into that, though, let's briefly recap who this report is for, because I think that context really helps understand what should be in it.
So again, touching on, accomplishing some of those goals and reaping the benefits of effective reporting, we are really targeting this report at our C-suite or executive team, investors, and other departments within the organization. So with that in mind, this needs to be a high-level summary.
If you were paying attention there, those happen to be all of the groups that impact how much money your department has to spend. So that's why we keep harping on it needs to be all about the money, all about the money. That's because the revenue that you generate is directly correlated to the amount of money they're going to present to you in their next budget cycle.
In addition to, tying back to the dollars, when you're looking laterally, it can help improve communication and working relationships with those other departments. I know that I've run into issues in the past where, the departments may feel like, marketing is telling them what to do and not listening to them. But when you're bringing insights to the table, when you're showing how you're impacting their revenue, and that you've got, a bigger stake in the game, they're going to be more open to listening to what it is that you have to say and working collaboratively with you, or at least that has been my experience.
Absolutely. Yeah, it makes a big difference when they know that the time that they're going to put into writing the blog for you or getting you feedback on this piece or the other, or even just giving you decent information for you to do your job, is going to roll up into a revenue impacting work product. It can make all the difference in the world. So how do we do that? What should be in this report? Let's start going through the sections.
So again, we want to focus on what's important to the C-suite. And if you haven't picked up on that yet, that is revenue. And so one way that we do this is we group our ROI and our revenue reportings by program so that we can have maximum insights.
And we do this by program because we found in our experience that if you just report one big lump sum number of, hey, we contributed to this much revenue or this much revenue for this particular reporting period, that's not low enough level of detail for anybody to really interpret it or process it or give it a whole lot of thought. But at the same time, if you bring this down to too low of a detail level and you're talking about, this particular tactic and when we advertised on Facebook with this particular advertisement, it resulted in this much revenue, that's down in the weeds and these people don't have time to sit through that long of a report and aren't really interested at that level. And so providing a report that's at the program level really is this kind of the sweet spot of the 50,000 foot view versus the 5,000 foot view or 5 foot view. I suppose it would be beneficial if we recapped what a program is though quickly for our audience in case they've forgotten.
Yes. So a program is the intersection of an audience and an objective, and all of the tactics that are used to get to that specific audience to meet that specific objective are going to be your program.
And if you're a new listener, we strongly recommend going back and listening and reading the blog. Whatever you do, don't launch another big campaign. We'll link that in the show notes or going back and listening to, I think it's episode 15, where we talk about what's so wrong about a campaign. It's a bit of a rant, but it's a good episode.
gives you a lot of insights into how we think.
Absolutely. So what's the next section after we've talked about reporting on ROI and revenue per program?
Well, actually, let's take a step back, because before we actually do that, before we get into this program summary, and I think we should provide a little bit more detail about that, we are going to provide one quick slide or one quick graph or page that shows the high-level media investment versus revenue, and specifically getting to the core of how much did I spend on one and on what programs and assets did I spend. And what this is going to be, and we've got a great template that we will share with you in the show notes that really lays this out if you're having a hard time falling to the audio version. But what we're looking at is graphed over time, how much have we spent on this program, and then what has our revenue been. And what that's going to include is your revenue up to a certain point when you're able to report on it, but then it's going to include projected revenue moving forward. And so we're giving them an idea of not only what we've accomplished, but what we say we're going to accomplish as well, and that the connection between investment and revenue.
And then you'll take that high-level summary and then break it down and loop through it program by program, as we said, with a focus on ROI. But as we said before, you're going to have to show your work on that ROI. So you're going to want to include some key KPIs, as well as a couple of other numbers that this audience is probably going to be looking for. And those would include things like impressions, ad impressions, because they're used to seeing that in a marketing report. And it gives them some sense of how you're putting their money to work as far as building awareness for the brand. Engagements is a number that we always like to include, just to show that we're not just putting a brand out there and billboards and stuff. We're actually getting people to engage with the brand and driving them to the website. They're watching videos. They're doing things that go beyond just passively seeing the brand name. Get into those KPIs and then start talking about revenue. So you want to highlight, you know, what is the projected revenue off of this period's marketing activity for this program? And how does that translate into an ROI figure? So when you take that and subtract out the costs, what are we really getting in return for that effort?
When we're talking about revenue, ROI, whatever our most important KPIs are, typically with this audience, you usually have a number representing new contacts or qualified leads, something that's sort of showing them what's in the funnel. We want to make sure we use graphs. Graphs are important because when we're looking at just the numbers, that's one point in time and we don't have any context to compare it to. But when we look at the graph, which is showing a trend over time, we can show the growth and we can show where we've made improvements. And that's a really great story to tell.
So once you get out of that program revenue and ROI section, where you've gone through, you know, however many programs you have running, and some organizations will only have one program running, so that'll be a nice one-page short and sweet section. Some organizations will have 5 to 10 programs running, and if you're presenting, you've got to whip through them pretty fast. The next up, we're going to get into the asset building. So any of the costs that went in that first section are your short-term investments. These are investing in content that is specifically tied to short-term gains in a program. This is investing in media. When we move into the asset section, now we're going to show them this is what you're getting for your money when we're investing in longer-term objects like content and in brand.
And again, this is important because what we build here, these long-term assets, are leading to future profitability. And so we want to make sure that we're documenting and, again, showing this growth over time. So we do that in a few different ways. We do that by looking at our addressable market. And what this is a combination of our cookies as well as our leads. And that's often tracked through our CRM. We also want to track on brand. Now, this may or may not be something that you are in a position to report on.
Yeah, it depends on a couple of things. How easy it is to get brand awareness type of data for your organization. I know that a lot of organizations do this through market research firms that are external to the organization. It's expensive. They are lucky if they get to do it once a year. So it's hard to do a regular recurring report on brand awareness. We found a hack to get around this a little bit, to be able to use AdWords to do it. We talk about that in more detail in a webinar that we did on the same topic a few weeks back. But basically, you're just taking a look at how many people are Googling your brand name. And if they are Googling your brand name, they're obviously aware of your brand name. So there's some degree of proxy there that you can estimate it.
And again, if you're looking at that as a trend over time, then that puts it into context and you can see if that's improved or if you've got some room to work on that.
Absolutely. And the last component is content. Some content that we produce is short-term, flash-in-the-pan content. It supports a particular program. It's just creative that's going to run to support some advertising or some other lead generation type of effort. Some content that we produce, however, works more as an asset for us because it can sit out on our site and over time will generate more and more and more either interest, engagement, or revenue or something along those lines. And when we're reporting on this, there are a couple of key metrics that we want to look at. We want to look at quantity. How much content have we produced that's evergreen that's going to continue to work for us for a long period of time? And then we also want to look at quality. What is that content doing for us? So quantity is just the number of pieces. Quality, you're going to have to look at other metrics that can be, you know, gauges for how well that content works for you. One of those is, you know, engagement, total time of engagement that you have in the content that you've produced. So if they're engaging with the content, they're obviously engaging with the brand, that's going to lead to future revenue. Sometimes you can connect it directly back to revenue or leads or KPIs that lead to revenue. In other words, if this content has strong calls to action, it's persuasive content and it can convert people right on the spot, sometimes you can connect it right that way. And that's a good gauge of quality as well.
In all cases, you want to make sure that you're graphing each of these metrics to, again, show that trend over time. And I think the final area here is insights. And really, this is being presented as bullet points with limited text. Again, looking for those insights which apply to the organization as a whole. This is a high-level report, so you don't need to get into all of the details now. You just want to whet their appetite, let them know what information that we've used, and then during the course of the conversation, you can delve into some more of those details and figure out how it may be able to apply and where you may need to share additional information about that insight with other departments or other stakeholders.
So that's the report format. I do want to remind you once again that this is really the report that's designed to share with executives, leadership, laterally with other departments, other stakeholders within the organization, investors, etc. It's not what you're going to be working with internally as you work to measure and optimize your program. So to do the iteration portion of iterative marketing, you're going to need more real-time stats and you're going to need much more granular statistics down to the individual tactic level. That's not what this is for. That you're going to use a dashboard or another reporting mechanism. This is specifically for sharing outside of your group.
And that internal report is really going to depend on your organization and the role of marketing within your organization and who you're working with, if it's an internal team, if it's an outside agency, and really look for opportunities to report, again, using a lot of these same components, but just at a more granular level.
So I think that's a wrap for this week. As always, I want to thank everyone for making time for us. And until next week, onward and upward.
If you haven't already, be sure to subscribe to the podcast on YouTube or your favorite podcast directory. If you want notes and links to resources discussed on the show, sign up to get them emailed to you each week at iterativemarketing.net. There, you'll also find the Iterative Marketing blog and our community LinkedIn group where you can share ideas and ask questions of your fellow iterative marketers. You can also follow us on Twitter. Our username is @ITER8IVE. Or email us at podcast@iterativemarketing.net. The Iterative Marketing Podcast is a production of Brilliant Metrics, a consultancy helping brands and agencies rid the world of marketing waste. Our producer is Heather Ullman with transcription assistance from Emily Bechtel. Our music is by Seastock Audio Music Production and Sound Design. You can check them out at seastockaudio.com. We'll see you next week. Until then, onward and upward.